Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sub-Zero by Matt James, narrated by Daniel Henning. Prologue. McMurdo Station, Antarctica, 11 years ago. Bleary-eyed, Gavin Kirk stared at his monitor, dazed, hoping and praying that it was time for his shift to be over. Being a radar technician inside an Antarctic research station was easy work because nothing ever showed up on his screen. Ever. But if a green blip did appear, it usually represented something they were expecting, like a supply ship dropping off and/or picking up cargo containers, or an incoming aircraft doing the same. Checking his watch, Kirk sighed. Still an hour left, he thought, rubbing his face. He'd been at his station for 11 hours already and was deeply regretting his decision to cover for one of his fellow operators. Reflexively, his eyes flicked down to his wrist again, and he groaned in response. His shift was never going to end. "One more hour, Gavin," he thought. "Come on, dude, you can do this." At the moment, it was only Kirk and two of his COs on duty. The late-night graveyard shift was the worst McMurdo could throw at you. Literally, nothing appeared on their radars since deliveries were never scheduled to arrive overnight when the weather was at its worst. The sun was still up, and knowing it was so close to Christmas, it wouldn't be setting for a long time, not until March. That's how it was in the Southern Hemisphere. It was summer in December, the sun had risen in September, and would be up until the end of February. Antarctic summers were something to behold and something to loathe. The all-dark winters were, too. It wouldn't have mattered much, except that most of the people stationed here were Americans, and they were used to the northern hemispheric life, Kirk included. Leaning back in his worn, poorly padded office chair, Kirk yawned, blinking his eyes. For a second, they almost closed for good, but then something caught his attention as it flashed across the monitor. "Huh?" he said, getting the attention of one of his superiors from across the room.
"What is it, Kirk?"
Commander Fredericks asked. "I'm not sure, sir," he replied, yawning again. "I think I saw something."
"You think you saw something?"
"Well..."
"Either you saw it or you didn't. There is no think."
Kirk rolled his eyes. "Says the man who hasn't had an original thought in years." Fredericks was a hard ass, mostly because he hated his command. Only scientific-type gurus were really interested in being at McMurdo. Men like Kirk and Fredericks didn't belong here. They weren't even scientists. They were part of the security detail for the station. He looked up at his CO. "I definitely saw something."
"You sure?"
Kirk ground his teeth, hating the game Fredericks was playing. He returned his eyes to his monitor, mostly because he didn't want Fredericks to see how annoyed he was. "Yes, sir." The man loved having his ego stroked. Fredericks stepped up beside him.
"What was it?"
Kirk did the math and knew it could be only one thing. The blip hadn't come from the sea. Its trajectory had originated from the sky. "I believe it was a meteor splashing down off our coast." Fredericks laughed hysterically.
"A meteor? Really? That's what has your panties in a bunch?"
As mundane as it sounded, the relatively uneventful detection still needed to be recorded per McMurdo protocol. Kirk pulled a red binder out of his desk drawer but was stopped by the commander.
"Don't bother with that," Fredericks said. "It's just a meteor. I seriously doubt anyone back home is going to care about another damned rock falling from space."
"But, sir..."
"Look,"
Fredericks interrupted, waving his hand dismissively.
"If it'll make you feel better, you can at least jot down the thing's splashdown coordinates, but please, for the love of God, don't file an entire report."
He turned and headed off.
"I don't have the time or patience for something as trivial as that."
Southern Ocean, present day.
"So, what exactly am I looking for, Doc?"
Dr. Seth Donovan rubbed his forehead, wanting nothing more than to reach through his microphone and strangle the man on the other end. Donovan despised having to work so closely with the help. Those within his science division hadn't gotten along with the Endeavour's crew since the day they set sail for the Antarctic. As the head of the team, Donovan kept his squad of 40 moving toward one unified goal: scientific advancement. They never stopped pushing forward. He'd been told multiple times that his ambitions were unobtainable. The first time was while he was studying for the multiple degrees he had eventually earned. Then, he was reminded about it when applying for the Antarctic operation. Now, near the end of his detail aboard the Endeavour, it was being brought to the forefront again. In return, he told them all to kiss his ass. People didn't like Seth Donovan very much, but nor did he truly care what others thought of him. He was quickly moving up the DARPA ladder, specifically in the field of genetics. His desires were the same as the people cutting his lucrative paycheck: keep the country safe by providing them the means to do so. Donovan, however, had a higher purpose. More than anything, he wanted the glory that came with success. His guaranteed promotion, which he deserved, would finally earn him the respect from all of the people that had mocked him over the years. Even if it was fake admiration, he'd be in a position for people to have to actually kiss his ass. Blinking away visions of himself winning awards and collecting monetary bonuses, Donovan turned his attention back to the sailor in the ADS. The atmospheric diving suit resembled a bulbous suit of armor. The men aboard the Endeavour called this particular variation Stay Puffed, like the giant marshmallow man from the original Ghostbusters. The modified Newt suit was mostly white and made its wearer look pudgy and clumsy. The same could be said for a few of the captain's men. Donovan tapped his wrist-mounted computer and keyed up his microphone, speaking his instructions through a clenched jaw and gritted teeth.
You are looking for an ultra-rare species of octopus, one that emits low levels of light via natural bioluminescence, one that didn't exist in this area until the last decade or so.
The man muttered back. So let me get this straight. I'm snagging a glowing squid?
Glowing squid? Donovan thought, closing his eyes. How on earth did I get saddled with these assholes?
Even before boarding the ship, he knew the seamen were going to be a nuisance.
And yet they're so much worse. It's not a squid, he corrected. It's the highly venomous cousin of the deadly blue-ringed octopus.
Donovan allowed himself the pleasure of a smile when the diver went silent. That made him feel in control. He didn't give away that his statement, from a technical perspective, was false. Yes, the animal they were looking for now was exceptionally dangerous, but no, it wasn't a relative of its infamous blue-ringed cousin.
But really, just like all humans are all related to one another, theoretically, all of these things are related too.
Right, the diver said, breathing more comfortably. Well, let's get this show on the road, shall we?
Donovan was coordinating the descent beneath the ocean remotely from inside one of his four labs, safely aboard the Endeavour. To his right was the pilot of a remotely operated vehicle, and the man seated on his left was responsible for the ROV's cameras, among other internal systems. The four-foot-long, hot-dog-shaped, unmanned submersible floated alongside the sailor in the ADS. Cameras mounted to 8 different locations along the ROV would catch everything on video, documenting the groundbreaking event for all to see. Unfortunately, it could also document their failure. His failure, if they came away empty-handed, and all of those in charge would see.
Can't let that happen, Donovan thought, squeezing the table-mounted microphone stand harder. I won't allow it to happen.
As the second technician powered on the cameras, the world beneath the waters of Antarctica bloomed to life. Even for a man as cold and as calculating as Donovan, he couldn't help but hold his breath in awe. The lighting wasn't enough, though. He wanted more. But it was going to be an issue for everyone because they were so deep below the surface. As a result, the unmanned submersible was forced to use the lowest level of light, just enough for the cameras to see by. The creatures living down here would likely scatter.
the lowest level of light to us would be considered blazing to them. They'd never been out of the dark. It was going to be a slow process. To top it off, the weather outside was worsening. They needed to proceed with caution. Donovan and the rest of the Endeavor's crew had just a day to finish what they started. Winter was nearing, and their time in Antarctica was up.
The diver said. I think I've got something.
Donovan's right eyebrow raised in confusion. He had just checked the depth gauge and saw that they hadn't yet touched bottom. Octopuses weren't like their squid relatives. The former preferred to hide in whatever rocky crevices they could squeeze themselves into. Squids were the exact opposite and loved the freedom of the open ocean. That can't be. Donovan's voice trailed off when he saw a pulse of light emanating from directly beneath the diver's feet. He had a wealth of cameras attached to his suit's hard casing, and right now, they were pointed straight down.
Move back a little, Donovan ordered. Don't come down on top of it.
Roger that, the diver replied. Don't squish the squid.
Donovan ignored the smattering of laughter around him and focused his attention to the image on the screen. The octopus they were looking for was, indeed, bioluminescent. But it didn't use it in a way like this. The rapid succession of pulses he witnessed now almost reminded him of Morse code. Donovan knew that the species was intelligent, smarter than most life on Earth. He recalled researchers describing the animal's DNA to be alien-like, compared to the rest of the creatures. Their genetic profile didn't resemble any other living thing that called this planet home.
Truthfully unique, he thought, leaning closer to the screen array.
Each camera had its own display, and all of them were currently trained on the happenings beneath the booted feet of the diver, and each showed the magical light show. One of the many advantages they had aboard the Endeavor was government funding when it came to anything military. Donovan knew for a fact that their budget didn't actually exist. Yes, the ship's purpose being out at sea was public, but the exact costs involved were hidden. Even as the head of the science division, Donovan wasn't privy to that information. Neither is the captain, for that matter.
Sir,
the ROV pilot asked, his voice laced with concern. Donovan saw it, and he didn't like what he was seeing. As the diver moved away from the dome-shaped rocky outcrop and their prize, the creature's incredible display softened, and it began a low, canine-like growl. It wasn't prepared to attack, but warning them to stay back.
How far is he from it? Donovan asked, glancing over his shoulder.
30 feet, sir.
A woman, whose name Donovan never bothered to learn, replied. He keyed his microphone.
Move in closer.
Say the magic word,
the diver sarcastically responded, earning yet another chortle from the gathering mass of people. The crowd was a mix of his people and the captain's crew. While not one to back down from anybody, Donovan understood rule number one on board the Endeavor. Don't piss off Captain House. So he kept his mouth shut.
Moving in another 10 feet,
the diver announced, instantly silencing the room. The room, Lab 4, was in reality one enormous space split up into several large areas. The Endeavor was a recently decommissioned T-3 naval oil tanker. Soon after it was retired from active service, the U.S. Navy and DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, signed an agreement to build the floating research station. Unfortunately, Donovan had to share his personal space with the ROV and ADS operators. Having them close by was imperative to the success of their missions here in the Antarctic. It was the only reason he allowed the sailors access to his space. Otherwise, I wouldn't let the Saltines in. It's what he called the captain's men. If for no other purpose, it made Donovan feel better about being there and more in control. He hated the open ocean with a passion. Everything about it irked him. But his own goals superseded his discomforts. The cramped living quarters. The food. The people. Donovan preferred the company of his laboratory equipment to that of living things. People, for the most part, were awful to be around. Some called him a douchebag, but his like-minded colleagues thought of him as a genius. The ADS was slow-moving, and when the diver finally got into position, the first thing out of his mouth was,
"Uh-oh, I think I made it mad."
The electric blue flashes turned into a deeper shade of the same color. Donovan was shocked at what he saw. Whatever they had here was displaying its feelings like a mood ring on steroids. A soft chime in Donovan's ear caused him to growl.
The only person that could override his communications was Captain House.
"We have a situation above deck," House said.
"Now what?"
"What is it?"
Donovan asked, aggravated. Likewise, House sounded irritated too, grumbling something incoherently. What he said next boiled Donovan's blood.
"Bring our boy up ASAP. Our storm is rolling in fast and ahead of schedule."
"What?"
Donovan shouted, turning all heads toward him.
"Now, Seth,"
House ordered,
"or I'll come down there and do it myself."
Donovan walked away from his post.
"You can't do this, Sebastian. Not after all we've been through. Not when we're this close."
"The hell I can't," House replied. "This is my boat, Seth. If you don't bring my sailor back up immediately, I'll arrest you for negligence. I am in sole command when it comes to the safety of everyone on this ship, not you."
Donovan winced. He may have just broken rule number one. Without answering the incensed captain, Donovan logged off and begrudgingly relayed the man's order. There was no way in hell that he'd transmit the message as his own.
"We're aboarding," he announced. "Sorry, everyone. Captain's orders. Bring up the diver. Storm is coming in fast."
Dr. Donovan, the ROV's pilot said, "we have contact."
Contact? He thought it was a strange way to word a simple sighting. Donovan turned and looked up at the main screen, which was attached to the forward wall. There, floating 10 feet away from their diver, was an octopus, no bigger than one you'd find inside someone's home aquarium. But it wasn't the creature's size, or even its shape, that caught everyone's eye. It was the animal's vibrant, cracking blue veins that pulsated beneath its inky black skin. Usually, things at this depth would evolve some type of translucency in their pigment, not requiring it in the darker depths of the world's ocean. And yet, the one hovering before them had the dark skin.
"What do I do?" the diver asked.
Before Donovan, or anyone else, could reply, the animal shot forward at an incredible speed, latching itself onto the sailor's protective helmet. After years of studying the species, Donovan had never seen one act so aggressively to something so much bigger than it. All it had to do was retreat back into its hiding spot, and it would have been safe. Instead, it went out of its way to drive the diver away.
"It attacked him," Donovan thought, smiling. "This one will be a treat to exam."
"Fire harpoon!" Donovan shouted. He was happy to see the ROV pilot react immediately and depress the trigger of his fighter jet-like flight stick without skipping a beat. The controls were connected to the sub's net-loaded, hull-mounted harpoon gun. Instantly, both the diver and the creature were encased in the inescapable snare. In between flashes of light, cheers of joy, and the diver's frightened shrieks, Donovan turned to the closest technician.
"Bring them up, now."
1. The Southern Ocean contains some of the coldest water on Earth. Also known as the Antarctic Ocean, its sea temperatures range from 50 degrees Fahrenheit to an astonishingly low 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Not only is the ocean itself deadly, but so are the winds that steer it. Antarctica carries with it the strongest average wind speed of any place on the planet. And the Endeavour research vessel has been sailing those very waters for almost 3 months now. retrofitted back into service from a decommissioned tanker and named after renowned explorer Captain Cook's ship, just not spelled the same, the Endeavour was deployed by two factions with a long history of working together within the United States military, the Navy and DARPA. DARPA was responsible for the latest and greatest technologies in use by every branch of the military, and with their partnership here, they hoped to supply the soldiers fighting on the front lines with a newfound gift: invulnerability of pain. To extend a soldier's effectiveness in combat, they intended to block the debilitating effects of pain. Excessive pain blockers, the captain thought, rolling his eyes. He thought the very idea of hiding someone's pain was ludicrous. How on God's green earth could someone learn from their mistakes without pain in their lives? He believed that people were being babied enough as it was, even within the military.
Now they're taking away not only mental pain, but physical pain as well.
Yet, here he was, back on a naval ship. While technically it belonged to both the Navy and DARPA, he still would have never thought, not in a million years, that he'd be back at sea with an American flag on his shoulder. Captain Sebastian House had been a sailor under Uncle Sam for 25 years before his beloved wife, Karen, was killed in a traffic accident at the hands of an intoxicated driver 5 years earlier.
While his wife's death was hard on him, it was even harder on their only child, their daughter, Gianna.
Like her mother, G was a looker. Not only was she beautiful, with skin that was a mix from her parents, black and white, she also possessed a genius-level IQ. It, like her father's intimidating demeanor, turned most people off, especially the men that she had dated. They were terrified of her brain, and of her dad's brawn. Being a good bit smarter than your boyfriend didn't sit well with them. The constant rejection, combined with the emotional trauma sustained by her mother's death, drove Gianna to rely on something other than her father's unwavering love and support. It drove her to habitual drug use. One night, House got the phone call every parent dreaded to receive. His 22-year-old daughter had been arrested for theft and assault. And worse yet, her arrest led to losing her high-paying job with DARPA. She had been the youngest woman hired by DARPA in decades and accomplished the feat without any help from her father's friends within the organization. At the time of her hire, House couldn't have been prouder of his little girl. 3 years later, and one lengthy stay in rehab for Gianna, they were both on board the Endeavour. She served as the ship's electronics guru, while House acted as the vessel's overseer, its captain. And she was his responsibility, per his contract with DARPA. No one, not even the one person that House answered to aboard his boat, wanted her. She had burned one too many bridges, especially inside the company that had fired her.
"And now I owe Damon a lifetime of favors," he thought, sighing.
Damon Becker was the onboard liaison for both the Navy and DARPA, serving as a direct line of communication to each within the Endeavour. He reported back to the States every 2 days, precisely to update the chain of command with any and all details.
"I'd have rather shot myself than taken that gig," House thought, shaking his head.
While House ran everything physically related to the tanker, another man, a dictator of sorts, had his fingers in all that pertained to the work they did in the name of scientific advancement. Dr. Seth Donovan.
What an egotistical brat.
House was an old-school sea dog. He believed that you earned your keep with hard work and the right attitude, which in today's world didn't include respect for your elders. Donovan was 26 years younger than House, and it drove him mad to think that such a pompous asshat had already been given the position he had at 28. Theoretically, he and Donovan were equals while aboard the Endeavour, but House knew all he had to do was breathe differently, and he could force the little shit into whatever he wanted. Donovan was as spineless as the creature they sought. House couldn't care less about the squid, as the men called it. The only reason they continued to call it a squid was because of how Donovan reacted to the name. But House wasn't going to force his will on any of his men, Donovan included. He'd been in his men's shoes before, for over 2 decades. Each and every person House ever served under had come off as a bureaucratic fuckfish. He grinned. Yes, that's what they called the over-the-top, by-the-book commanders when he was enlisted, a fuckfish. House wasn't what you would call a typical Navy man. He didn't think or speak like most seafarers. Originally from Albany, Georgia, he thought and talked like those from the same area, simple and without bullshit. Purely put, House got straight to the point and didn't hold back. Gianna was the same way, too. No one would have guessed that she was as smart as she was if you were judging by her looks and slight southern drawl. Plus, they both had issues in specific social circles because of their darker skin color. Gianna had it worse, though, because she was often referred to as a half-breed. House hated that they were both judged by their skin color. It was the 21st century, and people still gave them funny looks when they found out who they were and what they did for a living. Whenever he told people he was going to be the captain of a state-of-the-art naval research vessel, the person's reaction was always the same. It was like clockwork. They were surprised. Being in his 50s, House was accustomed to it. Only being in her 20s, Gianna was still getting used to it. Neanderthals, he said when she was younger.
All of them?
She asked with tears in her eyes. He shrugged.
Not all of them. Those are the ones you don't let go. Be nice to everyone and the people who are friendly back. They're the keepers.
House smiled at the memory until one of his men rushed forward with the incoming weather report. The nasty storm they were expecting had shifted and sped up. Now it would hit them even sooner. The current trip down to the bottom of the Southern Ocean was to be their last, but they were supposed to have at least another 12 hours. House's eyes opened wide, calculating their time frame.
It'll be close, he told himself,
but he knew better. House always leaned toward the side of caution. No one would ever berate him for looking out for his people's lives ahead of the mission. He shook his head.
Can't chance it.
His verbal threat to Donovan, while genuine, meant very little if the man took it up with Becker. House held no real power over the scientist, just the ability to spook him into submission. Like most people who wielded power without earning it, Donovan rolled over every single time he sniffed a fight. Men like that had never fought for what they received and would gladly give it up to preserve themselves. House would have gone down swinging if it were him. In his prior stint aboard a military vessel, back with the Navy, House was the executive officer aboard the USS Harry S. Truman. His only regret before retiring was never commanding his own boat. Being in charge was second nature for House. It was easy for him because of the way he saw his job. If he respected the people around him, they, in turn, would return the favor. If they didn't respect him back, they weren't going to be on his ship for long. It made House smile when he recalled the boys that thought it would be wise to cross him. Usually, it only took him a few days to get them to see things more clearly. Sanitizing toilets for days on end could change someone's perspective in a hurry. Lifting his left hand, House activated his comms unit via his new YMP system, overriding and interrupting Donovan's own system below deck. The RISC-mounted personal computer was more of a mobile command console than anything else. It could literally do anything. The screen was 4 inches wide by 2 inches tall and had an incredibly responsive touchscreen. Those who held their own command aboard the Endeavor, including House's number 2 aboard the ship, was recently given one to test for DARPA. He tapped the All Call button, knowing full well that Donovan was going to go nuts because of it. The man was a creature of habit and precision. House lived his life by flying by the seat of his pants, living life like every day was his last. That didn't mean he was reckless, though. House was quite the opposite, actually. When he was younger, House had been advised to look into the SEAL program. An on-leave admiral once witnessed him take down three drunkards at a local watering hole and was impressed when House came away from the kerfuffle completely unscathed. He should have...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?